The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Very good. For those of you who are new initiates, Q&A with Layla is an opportunity for you to pose your questions to us collectively. I am your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and Layla Mutin is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. We work together on a daily basis, and so quite logical that we should do a duet in addressing your questions. And if you want to get questions to us, radioprogram@AOL.com is the way to get questions to us. Please make your question succinct and of general interest and not too complicated, because we can't solve all your medical dilemmas at once.
Please don't send us your medical history and the dosages of the medications you're taking and so forth and so on.
Right, because that's what
consult.
That's our day job. That's what we do, one-to-one with patients at the Hoffman Center. So this has been a very, very interesting week because, as you know, Layla, there was a big controversy with Eric Schneiderman, who is the Attorney General of the state of New York, who issued a cease and desist directed at four major retailers, Walgreens, Walmart, Target, and GNC, for carrying what, in his words, were worthless, adulterated herbal products. And he singled out several. I think it was valerian and ginkgo biloba and ginseng. And he said that he tested it and there wasn't any material there. Just, in some cases, just some vegetable material, some little wheat, flour, just nothing there. And so I have been endeavoring to, and unfortunately this got picked up by all the major papers, as you know.
Of course.
Not only that, but it was part of a campaign to discredit the supplement industry in general. Basically, people
coming up with
that old saw, that supplements are worthless, people are idiots, they're being duped, there's no regulation whatsoever. And so we've been endeavoring this week to set the record straight. And as you know, I've talked to a variety of people. I talked to Mark Blumenthal of the American Botanical Council at herbalgram.com, and I talked to Steve Mister, who's head of the Council for Responsible Nutrition, on one of our podcasts. So I urge you to check out our podcast, because I got to tell you, folks, this is the biggest crock, and it's a total grandstanding move by a politically ambitious, misinformed attorney general. In the guise of safeguarding public health, he has poisoned the well for lots of well-meaning supplement users. I think a vast majority of you are too smart and too cynical about the government to fall for this yet another scare story about supplements. Of course, this got picked up and amplified by all the various papers. They uncritically reported this without talking to some of the people who really are in the know. However, I have to say that some of the later stories did apply a corrective to this, because instead of just taking the attorney general's word for it, they began talking to some knowledgeable people about this situation. And a lot of scientists and researchers in the field said, hey, you can't, Layla, of course, you know a little bit about this country. What about this DNA fingerprinting for determining what's in a capsule?
It's not the standard way to test for anything.
Yeah.
Apparently, and this was done, I think it was just a year ago. I'm trying to remember the case, but it was completely wrong.
Yeah,
we did this in
2013, when something like this came up, and the Times published this big article, and then we tried to lay that to rest because the methodology was the wrong methodology.
Yeah, I mean, I think now Schneiderman's reputation is at stake, because he messed up big time.
Absolutely. I think he stepped in it, because
he didn't vet how anything was tested or anything. So he stepped in it. Exactly.
Yeah. And, these, there's politically ambitious politicians, and attorney general is usually a stepping stone to the governorship in many states.
Well, you know, I wonder if he was promised campaign funds by you-know-who.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say that he's on the payroll of the pharmaceutical industry, but I think he does want to align himself with, quote, mainstream forces, you know, maybe the Medical Society of the state of New York and maybe some of the, you know, maybe some of the drug companies. Who knows? I mean, he thinks he's on the right side of this, but he's, you know, he just... You know, you should think before you leap. And even if he wanted to do something along these lines, he should have just reached out to some of the experts in the field and said, look, these are my preliminary findings. Before I go public with this, is there any way that this might trip me up? Because, you know, there's going to be some blowback.
He didn't do his homework. He didn't do his due diligence.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And that worries me about an attorney general. Like, it worries me that, you know, in other realms of prosecution, you know, when he's prosecuting Wall Street big shots, is he, are they guilty before being proven innocent? Mm-hmm. Is he issuing press releases about supposed malfeasance when, I mean, of course, I don't know anything about Wall Street. I just know about our field of supplements and natural medicine. And they're woefully misinformed when it comes to this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. Well. Let's put that. I think this is a controversy that will die down because the vast majority of people are sophisticated enough to see through it. Mm-hmm. And eventually, although I don't have as big a megaphone as, you know, New York Times and all these publications and TV and whatnot. I mean, I saw just some really ridiculous reports where people were saying, well, you know, the supplements you use may be worthless. Okay. You know, that whole thing. So anyway, the interesting news this week, headline, this is from the Washington Post. It's like the national paper, right? If there's a national paper in America, you know, take your choice. It's the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Headline, the U.S. government is poised to withdraw longstanding warnings about cholesterol.
Yeah.
Hello? Check it out. The nation's top nutrition advisory panel has decided to drop its caution about eating cholesterol-laden food, a move that could undo almost 40 years of government warnings about its consumption.
Hooray!
I hate people who say, I told you so. But you know, we were in the vanguard of this. And actually, I've done several podcasts along these lines, trying to stir up opposition to blindly reiterating the DGA, the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which for the last four decades have emphasized low fat. Started in the 70s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you know, we don't listen to the Bee Gees anymore. You know, it's a little, you know, the classic rock, okay, fine, but, you know, it's time for a change. It's time to get past these obsolete guidelines. So what they're saying here, I'm going to continue in this article, and I think more and more people are going to be learning about this story this week. The finding follows an evolution of thinking among many nutritionists who now believe that for healthy adults, eating foods high in cholesterol may not significantly affect the level of cholesterol in the blood or increase the risk of heart disease.
That's right.
Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it, yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, well, I hope the public's going to embrace this. They're going to have to hear it many, many more times, not just from the Washington Post, but everywhere. You know, people have to unbrainwash themselves of their fat phobia that has been so deeply ingrained. I mean, it took me 12, 15 years ago, it took me a year or two to wrap my mind around the fact that, oh, I can eat these eggs. I can have these eggs.
It's you had egg phobia.
Deeply ingrained.
Egg phobia, yeah.
Egg phobia.
Yeah.
Cholesterol phobia, exactly.
You know, but... we've been voices in the wilderness for so long, and it's nice to be finally vindicated.
Yes.
And the style of nutrition that we've practiced, I know that you've practiced even before coming to the Hoffman Center. Now, this is what anniversary is this for you now?
Oh, 10th.
10th anniversary.
10th year.
Oh, my goodness.
Hoffman Center, yeah.
Oh, wow, we've got a party hardy for that.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it went by so fast, it doesn't feel like 10 years. It feels more like 5 or 6. So
time flies when you're having fun.
Been having fun this whole time.
Great. So.
Yeah.
And prior to that, you were at the Atkins Center, so you have been sort of front and center in the movement to apply a corrective to low-fat nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's called the truth in science.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. You know, after being in defense mode for so long, it's nice to exhale a little bit. You know, I haven't, but, you know, especially then, back at the Atkins Center, it was like everything was, you know, people are throwing darts, but no, you can't eat fat. You'll die. You'll clog your arteries. No, it's not true. Let us show you. And, you know, that Ansel Keys was wrong. What do you mean Ansel Keys was wrong? You know, the seven country study and so forth, is what, that's how the whole cholesterol, the saturated fat boom started.
Anyway. We had a very nice podcast last year about a book entitled Death by Food Pyramid. And, of course, we also talked to Nina Teicholz, who wrote a book called A Big Fat Lie, or The Big Fat Lie. I'm not sure which one. And I think the people like that have been influential, especially her, because her book has been really embraced. And she wrote a major op-ed in the New York Times, pushing back against the dietary recommendations. And, you know, kudos to her, because she's, you know, getting the word out. She's a good communicator.
Absolutely. You know, and Gary Taubes has been doing this for now many years as
Indeed.
Well.
And, yeah, he was the one who, in the New York Times Sunday magazine, people a few years back were greeted to a picture of
it. It was July 2002, because I remember reading it and jumping up and down in my living room. If it's all been a big fat lie?
Right. Very momentous.
Yeah.
That was, and it showed a picture of like a sizzling
steak with a pat of butter on it.
Yeah, a sizzling steak on the cover. It was like, oh, my God. You mean you're now telling us that it's okay to eat that stuff again? Yeah. All right. Anyway. Let's get back to more prosaic details, which are answering the questions of people who write in.
Okay.
So what do we have today?
All right. Caroline writes in with a question about xylitol. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. A few of the recent podcasts you mentioned xylitol, either as a sweetener or an ingredient in dental products. I believe that xylitol is a product that is toxic to dogs and maybe other animals.
Right.
What do you think of this?
I think it's correct. Thank you for pointing it out. It's not toxic to humans. It's toxic to dogs. And
are you a vet?
Right. So, I think I already issued, I think, a warning to people about I think this person is incensed that I'm recommending xylitol products to people because of the potential hazards to pets. Mm. And, you know, just as I think it's permissible for humans to eat chocolate,
Dogs
will get very sick. So you just have to keep that stash away from your dog. I think that that does not preclude chocolate consumption among humans. You know, similarly, there's some weird things about cat physiology, that cats don't do well with certain things. And even when it comes to vitamins, please don't give your multivitamin to your dog, because dogs and humans have different requirements. That's why you have pet supplements that are designed specifically for pets, not to be dangerous, because certain things can accumulate and damage the livers or kidneys of animals. So,
well, that brings up an interesting point, pointing to our scientific research done on rodents.
Okay.
Extrapolation to humans.
Right.
That's always a big question mark, and it's always, you know, we have to be careful there.
One of the experimental models that they often use to show the harmful effects of fats is they feed a high-fat diet to rodents. Mm. Now, the last time I checked, rodents don't generally, I mean, they eat anything. They're very omnivorous, but in the natural setting, they basically eat grains and other stuff. I mean, they can even be carnivores. They can eat, you know, they can eat animal protein. But in general, rodents are kind of designed to eat grains. And, you know, that's... Yeah. So when we see these experiments where, you know, look at all what a high-fat diet is doing to rodents, like, so humans shouldn't eat. Well, we're not, the vast majority of us aren't rodents. I know a couple of people, you know, but, you know, the vast majority of us are not rodents. So it's not, and we've, by the way, we have cured so many diseases in rodents. We've actually spliced the spinal cords of rodents where, you know, they've had spinal cords severed, and rodents have been made to walk again. But we're not quite there with humans.
Right.
So,
one day, hopefully. Yeah. Okay. Caroline, we hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, no, it's, I think it's a question. I think it's like she's pointing it out, and she's a little incensed. Like, how could, I mean, if you're animal centric, you know, just don't, you know, and you really, everything is about animals, then absolutely stay away from xylitol. But we're oriented towards humans here.
Yeah. Okay. Our next question is from Frank. Frank takes a lot of vitamins and supplements during the course of the day, many of them recommended by you, Dr. Hoffman. His question is, given that most or all should be taken with meals, aside from swallowing carefully, is there any harm in swallowing 2 to 3 pills or capsules with the same gulps of water? No.
Oh, that's welcome to my world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really good. I'm like a sword swallower. I can swallow like, 8, 10, 12 capsules
in one gulp.
But then generally a good strategy is to start with a little food.
Yep.
Start with a little bit of food to sort of, you know, provide a little bit of a platform in your stomach for these things to land on so that you don't take them on an empty stomach. And then, you know, take your few pills and have a few bites of food. Just use the food as a ramrod to push them down. As you swallow the food, you'll push the vitamins down. You know, drink some water. And then, you know, and then take the rest of your supplement. I mean, because I literally, I mean, not everybody
eight
has to do
good.
This.
I could take about 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But not tablets. They all have to be capsules. If it's a tablet, I've got to do one at a time.
I wish I had my vitamins in front of me because to count them, but I actually just had lunch and I took my vitamins.
I have mine in front of me. No, most of these are capsules and soft gels.
So how many physical pills are there?
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 capsules, 2 soft gels. These are my lunchtime supplements.
Right. You're a slouch. I mean,
this is lunch. The bulk of my supplements are dinner. And
right.
Some at breakfast, so
okay.
I kind of space it out.
Okay. Okay. So I do it twice a day because sometimes at dinner I just don't want to be bothered. So I do breakfast, lunch, and then I'm free. You know, I like to get things done early. And you know, the other thing is, if you take a lot of supplements near bedtime, there's a little more likelihood that you'll get reflux or heartburn. So those are prone. You know, you may want to take. And some of the supplements are, you know, maybe potentially energizing. And maybe you don't want to take them right before bedtime. So
Right. Frank is wondering, are there any supplements that should not be taken with the same meal? I can only think of one instance that comes to mind. Strontium should be taken away from calcium.
Right.
I doubt that Frank is taking strontium.
I think when people are taking amino acids, for example, when you want to take tryptophan or something, or you know, tyrosine for mood, you generally don't want to take it with other things because the other amino acids from the proteins you eat will compete for absorption with them.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain things that should be taken alone, and we have a few supplements that are probably best taken alone. You know, I like to make it convenient for people because if we say, well, these are, here's, you have to take supplements 6 times. It would take one of these with every meal, and then in between meals, you got to take this 3 times, and it's like, oh my God, on an empty stomach, then I have to think about not eating. It's like people get nuts about that. It's like only the most very, very structured person can follow such a regimen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your question, Frank.
Sure.
All right. Our next question is from Liz. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Love your podcasts. I'm giving my dad a supplement called Alcar with ALA. It supposedly increases energy, gets belly fat off.
Acetyl L-carnitine is in there, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Question is, but I've heard doctors say
in my opinion, I got to say, I think the claims that it gets belly fat off are exaggerated. I don't think that per se it gets belly
fat. It's a fat burner.
It helps
usher the fat into the mitochondria.
Theoretically,
itself,
it does, but I don't think that there's a lot of good studies that show that carnitine. I mean, I'd like to think so, and I know the physiology of carnitine helps fat to enter the cell where it can be burned. So theoretically, that might help, but there are not a lot of clinical trials showing that taking carnitine makes you lose scads of weight.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Well, Liz's question is, she's heard doctors say that carnitine is no good because it can turn into plaque.
No. What that is about is there's some studies that say that carnitine turns into TMAO, trimethylamine oxide, which is a new kind of controversial finding. It appears that TMAO may be associated with atherosclerosis, and carnitine may promote that. But also, a major source of TMAO is choline. Choline is from fish, And most studies show that in the real world, people who consume a lot of fish have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. If that were the case, right, then people who consume a lot of fish would have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. So there's some kind of chemical reaction that occurs in a few people, and they think it has to do with your gut flora. Yes, your gut flora. And in fact, there was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that didn't say stop eating meat, which contains carnitine, and stop eating fish, which contains choline. It said maybe we should give people antibiotics to get rid of the bacteria that convert this, you know, good stuff into bad stuff. Yeah. Of course, that's, you know, our approach would be different. It would be to optimize your intestinal flora, get rid of dysbiosis with probiotics, and, you know, don't put a lot of sugar and junk and chemicals in your GI tract.
Right, right. So take the carnitine, Liz.
Yeah, and I don't look. There's nothing. This is a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that's like theoretically. But in real life, there's no demonstration. In fact, now studies are hard-pressed to show that meat consumption is associated with cardiovascular disease. And, you know, try as they might, this, was, of course, goes back to that initial thing we talked about at the beginning of the show about the cholesterol, that now cholesterol is being stricken from the list of bad things, taboo.
That's
things.
Right.
Most studies are now showing that meat consumption is not so associated with cardiovascular disease. Some studies do, but when the studies are poorly done because they include meat from really poor sources, you know, processed meat. And then sometimes people who are meat eaters follow a less careful lifestyle in general. People who are not
meat eaters, what did you say once? They're the beer drinkers and the smokers and the lazy people.
They can be. I mean,
you know,
they can be.
That's how they're classified.
Yeah, but I mean, look, you take a group of meat eaters, and you got the folks like us who consume meat, you know, and are very carefully prepared grass-fed meat, and we consume it in moderation. And then there are people who are, you know, would be grouped in with us, who are people who, you know, eat a lot of fast food hamburgers and do a lot of relatively
burgers
unhealthy
and fries
stuff.
And
they
don't
exercise. They're overweight, and they're at higher risk of smoking. Consuming a lot of chemicalized foods. And probably in addition to the meat, they're less careful about their sugar consumption and their refined carbohydrates consumption. So you can't, you know, meat as a marker, meat consumption as a marker for healthy lifestyle. Some people who consume a lot of meat, frankly, are not engaged in a healthy lifestyle.
That's true. That's true.
So that skews the results of some of these studies.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, a logical inflection point. Because we need to pause. We divide these podcasts into two parts. So those of you who are listening, please refer to part two of today's podcast. And Layla, give us a preview of what questions we're going to address in part two.
How to deal with the terrible side effects of prednisone.
Okay, that's a good general question.
Yeah.
All right, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're with Layla. Today it's Q&A with Layla, our weekly session in which we answer your questions. And we'll be right back with part two of Intelligent Medicine.